they're using toys when they're having sex. We can do something about that. Elect and he'll keep your neighbors from having sex with toys. What's in my drawer? Don't look at my drawer. That's what? What's that thing? No, no, that's it. Yeah, it's vibrating, but no, it's nothing. Oh dear, oh me. the world's going crazy. It is. It's going insane, I think. I don't know what's going on anymore. Vermont Green Party now has a steering committee member who had visions 3 days before 9/11. That's how she knows that it was a... Gosh. Hillary Clinton's going to be the next Democratic nominee. You bet me now. Hey, well, I just don't know. You know what? It's a good thing the show's ending. Oh, yes. Let me just, one little last item I want to mention. This is an untold story about Iraq. Turkish Army sends 40,000 troops. That's bound by Kurdistan in Iraq. Turkey has sent nearly 40,000 troops to southeast to prepare for an expected rise in Kurdish rebel incursions. See, the Turks are kind of pissed off because the Kurds are using Iraq as a basis to attack into Turkey. You know, remember that Turkey wouldn't let us, like, stage a 4th Division from Turkey to go into Iraq? They actually wanted to invade Kurdistan.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
And I'm Jesse Russell.
Ford said Thursday it's closing plants in St. Paul, Minnesota and Norfolk, Virginia. The United Auto Workers Union says the closings are a continuation of the devastating restructuring plan Ford announced in January. The UAW says workers are paying the price for Ford's loss of market share and for the nation's failure to enact rational job-creating policies for U.S. industry. The UAW is paying a steep price as well. According to filings with the U.S. Labor Department, the UAW lost 10.5% of its members in 2005. That's down now to a total of 557,000 active UAW members in the U.S.
Outsourcing may not have the benefits previously touted by advocates. A new study by outsourcing advisory firm TPI says that after governance costs, professional fees, and severance pay are factored in, savings are on average around 15%. The new information flies in the face of previous estimates that outsourcing could save companies upwards of 60% in costs.
The United Steelworkers Union is suing Alcoa in a federal class action suit to defend retirees from cuts in their health care benefits. USW spokesman Gerald Dickey says despite big profits, Alcoa started charging some of its retirees premiums of as much as $400 a month, even though the union contract provides health care with no premium payments by workers.
The company has unilaterally decided to start charging them a premium for their health care. These are people on fixed incomes. And in order for them to keep the same benefits, they will be required to pay in excess of $400 a month for a family plan to keep the same benefits.
Dickey says this move by Alcoa is part of a national assault on pensions.
Highly profitable company. No need whatsoever to go after these retirees. Profitable companies and highly profitable companies now want to jump on this bandwagon and try to gut our pension system.
Since Alcoa could try expanding these arbitrary unilateral benefits cuts in the future, Dickey says the USW will also attempt to address the issue at the bargaining table.
Michael Franti from Spearhead talks about the new benefit CD for the nonprofit environmental law firm, Earth Justice.
I'm always involved in Earth Justice as an idea, no matter where I go.
Franti, along with artists Nora Jones, Los Lobos, Willie Nelson, and Bonnie Raitt, donated their music in support of life's absolute necessities, clean air and water.
Music today is not speaking to really what's happening on the streets. It's really important that artists come together, work on projects together, and put out unified voices about what's happening today in our planet.
In the United States alone, more than 70,000 people die per year from air pollution.
Keep on talking now. Yes, I will. Keep on singing by.
Music makes a difference. Give it a spin at wherewelive.org. That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
Doctors in Idaho are being asked, why get sued when a simple I'm sorry will do? The Idaho legislature has enacted a new plan that they hope will cut back on malpractice lawsuits, encouraging doctors to apologize when treatments don't go as planned. Insurance companies have a long-standing practice of encouraging doctors not to apologize in such cases out of fear that it may increase the chance of a lawsuit. However, Robin Brody of the Idaho Trial Lawyers Association says studies show that when doctors apologize and explain unintended outcomes, patients are actually less likely to sue.
When we let our doctors talk to patients openly, ultimately that benefits everyone.
The new Idaho apology law protects doctors from having their apologies used against them in court.
Here's the Wynn Economic Report. Are incomes for the average American rising? The average per capita after-tax income rose 8.6% between 2001 and 2006, but huge increases in earnings by the wealthiest portion of society skewed the figures. The median family income fell 3.6% from 2001 to 2004. This means that real income for most people in society either stagnated or fell during this period.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome to All Things Reconsidered with your host, Bruce Birch.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bruce, and I am back on the air with you one more time again this week here in at All Things Land. Wanted to, what an interesting week it's been. I was listening to Rama a little bit here before we came on with All Things this evening, and just wanted to give a shout out to my friend Rama. Great show, fantastic content there tonight. Before I get to carried away here, which I'm apt to do, those of you who have listened to me before, I'm thinking this might be, I don't know, 34, 37, 38 shows, 40, I'm not really even sure at this point. This entire radio programming, this whole radio broadcasting thing has just been a really fantastic thing for me, and I just wanted to say to all of you who are listeners and who have been steady listeners, thank you for joining me, and thank you for being loyal to this radio program. Tell your friends. You know, if they want to get smarter, here's the place to do it. Maybe not with my show, but for Bob Kincaid's show for sure, and maybe Fourth Estate Radio, because John Fox is pretty amazing. We are streaming world freaking wide at the WhiteRoseSociety.org, actually at the Head On Radio Network. You can go to headonradionetwork.com, headonradionetwork.com, and you can click on the Listen Live button. Of course, if you're hearing this, you already have done that. But you can also get in on the chat room there at the Head On Radio Network chat room. Just go there, click on the chat room, chat live, I think is the moniker up there. That'll take you into the chat room, and where the finest minds of the Internet are hanging out, and it looks like there's actually some people working and just talking and having a good old time, so... If you ever want to know anything interesting about liberal progressive politics, that's the place to go. Go ask a question. I bet you they can answer it. Or if they can't answer it, they can tell you where to go look. And if they don't tell you where to go look, I'm sure they can tell you where to go. They can tell you where to go. Arf, arf. Anyway, last night on Fourth Estate Radio, we had a wonderful send-off to our good friend Puffy McMoonface, Scott the Hack McQuack. So if you didn't hear that show last night, you can also go to WhiteRoseSociety.org and get that radio program. Wanted to also let you know, let's see, there's one more thing. I'm trying to remember what it is. If you want to get in on the radio program tonight, you can dial 1-877-443-2366, and I will take the call. Now, my fantastic producer, Agnes Kincaid in the wild, wonderful mountains of West, by God, Virginia, will take your telephone call and we'll shoot you right into the radio program. So if you do want to call that number, she is there standing by. Shiva, the seven-armed woman. she is there standing by waiting for your radio program. Now, that number, again, is 1-877-443-2366. Conversely, if you'd like to email, you can also do that. You can email me by sending me an email at, well, very simple, all things at allthingsreconsidered.org. I will pick up that email, and if it looks like it's something that needs to be read over the air, I will do that. If you request that I read something or pass along some information, I will certainly do that, because one of the things about this radio program at All Things Reconsidered is that we really do try to create true public radio. You know, this isn't radio for people who think that they know what people want to hear. This is radio for people who know what they want to hear and intentionally go out to hear it. And that's right here on the Head On Radio Network. So, you know, I'm really glad to have you along for the ride this evening. All right, let's get into the heart of things tonight. I actually have the email that I've up, and I'm trying to check it as I'm talking. And it looks to be. Let's see if I have this correct. I will. Just one second, folks. Okay, where's the Jeopardy music? Do, 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 do. Okay. My friend, later on in the radio program, we will have an author on with us who wrote a book called When the Angels Have Risen, and his name is Andrew Feeder, and I will we'll be talking with him a little bit later on in the radio program, so do look forward to that. It's a wonderful book. So do check us out for that. I'm floundering here a little bit. On to the meat of the program. You know, we were talking a little bit yesterday on All Thing or on Fourth Estate Radio, and one of the things that we were talking about was the whole Condoleezza Rice thing, and how she, you know, this week got, I believe she was subpoenaed. Now, let me explain to you a little bit about. Before I get too far into that, let me explain to you a little bit about where I am and why I may sound to be a little bit out of the loop. I am presently in Woodland Hills, California, and while I'm here in Woodland Hills, I'm attending a conference that's going to keep me busy from like 9 in the morning until 10 at night every day, including today, actually. And so I sort of snuck away to do the radio thing because you guys are very important to me. And doing this radio program is very important to me because we're trying to build, trying to rebuild the American dream again. And you can't do that by taking a day off. You got to do it every day. You got to do it whenever you're supposed to do it. You get up and you do it. So I'm at this conference, and it's in Woodland Hills, California. And I had the great good fortune to have the access while I'm out here to drive around a bit and find out some of the local stuff, and I went down to went down to the ocean, obviously stuck my toe and went, damn, that's cold. and went out to lunch so we're not talking about politics right now, we'll get there, just hang tight. Went to this really cool Italian restaurant that was run by a Chinese guy who went across the street to get Chinese food to bring back to the Italian restaurant because he says he didn't like the food there. It's his own restaurant. Oh, my goodness. So, I was thinking while I was there, okay, well, now do I want to eat this? And so I went in there and, in by the bar and kind of looked back to see who was cooking, and it was a Hispanic guy cooking Italian food in a Italian restaurant owned by an Asian fellow. So it was, cultures abound out here in California. It's really kind of cool. Heading down the Pacific Coast Highway from there, I checked out Santa Monica Pier, went down on the pier, and listened to a wonderful musician, just a fantastic musician, really nice guy, and maybe we'll play a clip or two or at some point from that, some of the street musicians there. You know, some of these folks down there are highly talented, and it's really kind of neat. So I went down there, checked that out, didn't ride the Ferris wheel, looked at it, and went, oh, I bet it's cold up there. Because it has been kind of chilly here in Southern California. For those of you who are regulars to this radio program, you will know, you know that there is a friend of this radio program named Michael Stettler. And Michael Stettler is running for Congress in the in California's 24th district. Maybe he'll correct me. I'm thinking it's the 24th district of California. He's running against Gallagher. And now he's not too far away, and I understand that he's going to actually come down tonight. We're going to spend some time. So if the All Things Reconsidered program that I run comes to your hometown, we'll spend some time. We'll spend some time. We'll get together and have coffee or something. Maybe tell a lie or two. Say bad things about the president. I'm sure we will do that. W means wrong. Okay. So I went to the Santa Monica Pier, got done with that. Came back to my hotel and kind of hung out here. And then yesterday, I was able to get away again. Boy, I'm just like a little skippy man running around. Went down to Hollywood Boulevard and Melrose and down in that area, which you heard me talk about last night if you listened to this program last night or listened to Fourth Estate Radio last night. And, you know, it's really interesting down there because, you know, when you're down on Hollywood Boulevard there on the Walk of Fame with all the stars and all that, you know, people stop and they take pictures in front of the stars and all that. And I think that's fine. You know. Myself, I walked along and just sort of like marveled at the humanity fawning over fame, you know, people who are, people who are famous. And it just really kind of was, it kind of blew my mind. I mean, I kind of look at that in a different light myself, as if we all have a talent to share with the rest of mankind. And just because we're not on the radio or on the television or on the movie screen or whatever doesn't necessarily mean that we're not famous in our own right, because we are. We are definitely famous in our own right. And it is extremely important, ladies and gentlemen, it is extremely important that we do what we need to do to try to, oh my goodness, they're saying I'm not very loud. Well, I don't know that I understand that. Okay. Anyway. Point being is that, you know, we all have our roles to play in life, and we all have our times that we need to step out and make ourselves known. I did it with this radio program because I believed very strongly that when I created this program that a new voice needed to be out there. Now, did I think that I was going to be a good voice to do it? I said to myself, well, you know, the worst thing that could happen is that I don't have any listeners. And, after 2 or 3 weeks, I'll get tired of it and move on to something else. Well, I started doing it, and I started picking up listeners, and I went, wow, well, maybe I am good at this, and continue to pick up listeners today. So, you know, I'm doing it because I believe that for some reason, you know, I have something to say, and, you know, all of us have something to say, and that's what this program is about, is giving voice to real America, giving voice to a free America. You are listening to the Bruce Birch All Things Reconsidered radio program. You can call into this radio program by dialing 1-877-443-2366. We'll get on to some politics here shortly. I know that my producer is now saying I need to take a break. And I do what my producer tells me to do because I don't want the evil eye. And I'm sure she can give one, too. All right. We'll be back in just a little break. This is All Things Reconsidered. My name's Bruce Birch. We'll be right back.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. Hertenu oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Listen to me, Shirley Jones. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the Internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Lots of people talk about the ways that schools should inspire students to be creative. I'm Mary Chapin Carpenter. Business and education leaders say that young workers too often lack the creativity needed to remain flexible and excel on the job. Well, helping young minds tap their creativity is just as important as mastering math and English skills. When you look at today's educational landscape, one of the best places that creativity is actively encouraged is in music class. Music classrooms today are like deep wells of creative energy just waiting to be explored by young minds. Don't let it go to waste.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Guitar, Baldwin Piano, and this station. March is Music in Our Schools Month. Music, part of a sound education.
Can you imagine a world without children? A world without their smiles or their laughter? A world where children don't play or sing or dream or imagine?
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, we can't imagine a world without children. That's why we're working every day to find cures for diseases that strike down children everywhere. Diseases like cancer, pediatric AIDS, and sickle cell. And we won't stop until every child is cured and every disease is defeated. Because we can't imagine a world without children. Can you?
Finding cures, saving children. St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. To learn how you can help, call 1-800-931-0800 or log on to our website, stjude.org.
Yes, we are.
We're going to jam it with you.
All right, you're back on with All Things with Bruce Birch. I'm not going to sing to you tonight. Oh, I did sing it one time in my illustrious short life. Wanted to, you know, just really briefly, I wanted to share some personal history with you folks. And maybe you can, maybe if you're interested, you can stay tuned and listen. If you're not interested, that's fine too. I spent some time in this great, fantastic, amazing nation of ours, homeless. About 2.5 years I spent homeless in this nation. And I can't help but think that that some of the stuff that I was telling you about earlier about wanting to, you know, have a voice and use that voice is because of that life experience, that life experience being that that is a section of the population that has no voice and is often ignored when they do raise their voice, you know. So maybe that's what's pushing me on a little bit. But I do understand that I have I wanted to go over the phones here because I have a caller on line one. Rob, how are you doing this evening, Rob, on line one?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Pardon me?
I said fantastic. What's on your mind tonight?
Okay. There's a few things on my mind. Okay. I don't know if you've heard of Kay Griggs.
Kay Griggs. I have not heard of Kay Griggs.
Okay, Google it. It's a very interesting. There's about 2 hours of her interview on the web, and apparently 8 hours on DVD. She talked about Skull and Bones and similar things in Princeton and the rise of, well, George Bush for one, but a number of other people who surround themselves with George Bush.
Okay.
It's
sort of like the sort of like the rich boys club there at Yale and Princeton.
Yeah, and they indoctrinate the up and comers with homosexual activity.
Really?
Yeah. According to her, anyway.
Well, that explains why he was a cheerleader then.
I think
okay,
so.
That was a bad joke. I'm sorry. I'm not. Oh, I didn't say that.
But in a way, what it does is it preys on people's weaknesses and indoctrinates them in a way that shames them and puts them in a position where that they are not able to come out in a way, to be honest in a way, to, you know, expose the lies and the manipulations of what's going on in the real world.
Well, and I think, you know, that there the rabbit hole, I have a friend of mine who comes in on the radio program occasionally, and he will actually, the guy I'm going to be meeting, Michael Stettler. When we get together, we talk about the rabbit hole.
Right.
And the farther down you go, it's the strangest places you end up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I would imagine there are a tremendous amount of connections, and connections that I would imagine be very surprising to all of us. Between the Republican and the Democratic Party, even.
Sure. Sure, the elite in general.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another friend of mine calls them the bourgeoisie.
Yeah. which is frightening in a way. I mean, and I called several weeks ago anyway, talking about 9/11 and the cover up about that. And I think it's all connected. And what worries me is that there's going to be, there's a website called 9/11, The Trip to Tyranny. And I think that's what we really should be concerned about. I have a friend who's from Czechoslovakia, and she grew up during the Soviet control of Czechoslovakia. And what she said to me was that we've had it too easy for too long, and that we almost need a George Bush and need the tyranny to begin before we're able to, you know, really get into the streets. I mean, look at what the Mexican immigrants have done. I mean, they shamed us, really, when they took to the streets. Look at what we did in the last war protest.
I know it is shameful. It is shameful that the people of this nation, who are this. I think we've gotten lazy. What do you think, Rob? What do you think? What do you think the cause is for this sort of widespread apathy?
Well, you know, it's complacency. I'm not sure if this came from the movie or real life. The more people voted for what's the show that I can't think of right now? American Idol than voted for
yes.
the president. I mean, is that real? I'm not sure.
It doesn't surprise me.
No, it doesn't either. But that's the sort of thing. It's NASCAR. Football and baseball, it's religion. It takes us away from the important things that are out there that, you know, 9/11 is my thing right now because I've been doing some papers about it. I'm a 47-year-old in college, and so I'm kind of immersed in that. But that seems to be a symptom that
I think so.
People don't look at what's real. You know, how many people have seen... No, I want everyone who's listening to Google WTC7 video. Watch that building come down. That's the World Trade Center building number 7 that came down about 5:20 on the afternoon of September 11th. And tell me that's not controlled demolition. The first time I looked at that, I got chilled. I know what controlled demolition looks like.
Sure.
But, you know, I mean, you know, it's...
Well, and I was going to say, I was going to say that there, I mean, I've seen both, you know, read both arguments, watched a little, my sister actually sent me an email tonight that included another video of the whole thing about the Pentagon, you know,
right.
So I'm thinking, and this stuff is spreading. Now, my sister is not, a person who is, prone to heavy political activity such as I am. I mean, it's
right.
She just isn't. She's more into, she does what she does, but she's
right.
not, you know, immersed in subversive stuff.
Right.
immersed in political activity like I am. And so, but she sent me this link to this, and she says to me, you were right. That was a one sentence, the only sentence in the whole email. You were right.
Right.
And said, you know, basically with a link to this video, and I watched it, and again, the facts don't, there's too many questions. Again, you know, and I'm not one to say that I know the answers or I'm going to draw the conclusions, Rob.
Right.
But I will definitely, if there are the questions, then we need to ask those questions. And there needs to be a realistic investigation, at least surrounding the whole Pentagon situation and perhaps World Trade Center 7 as well.
And
that gives us a realistic answer because, you know what, enough of us know enough about reality to know when we see non-reality at
right.
least.
And I think that, you know, and I'm not sure if you know that, I'm going to school now, that there's a Loose Change is a documentary done by a couple of college students. It's hitting the, college networks right now. A lot of people are getting emailed by this. You can Google Loose Change, it's usually the second or third one down that you can go right to the Google and it'll play the
Google video, right.
It's
actually in the Google video
right,
section.
Right.
I watched it there late one night. I had to work overnight one night and
right.
and watched it and was like, wow, this is pretty amazing. Rob, yeah. I've got a hard break. I got to hit real quick. But what I want, you know, and then I have an author calling in. I'd love for you to come call back later on. Let's talk about it some more if you want to.
I appreciate it, Bruce. I really do.
And I hope you have a wonderful evening. If I don't hear from you again tonight, then we'll, you know, obviously we'll get together again.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, man. Have a great evening.
Bye.
Bye. You are listening to All Things with Bruce Birch. This is Radio for a Real, here we go, Radio for a Free America, Radio for Real People, whatever you want to call it. It's right here. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to get on the radio program, you can dial 1-877-443-2366. We'll be right back.
Michael Franti from Spearhead talks about the new benefit CD for the nonprofit environmental law firm, Earth Justice.
I'm always involved in Earth Justice as an idea, no matter where I go.
Franti, along with artists Nora Jones, Los Lobos, Willie Nelson, and Bonnie Raitt, donated their music in support of life's absolute necessities, clean air and water.
Music today is not speaking to really what's happening on the streets. It's really important that artists come together, work on projects together, and put out unified voices about what's happening today in our planet.
In the United States alone, more than 70,000 people die per year from air pollution. Music makes a difference. Give it a spin at wherewelive.org. That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye, baby, by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion makes sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball. While gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
All right, you're back on with real radio. This is Bruce Birch, and this is All Things Reconsidered. And that was actually a cool tune. I'd like to hear that one all the way through. What's wrong with the world, Mama? Okay, we do have an author on the line tonight, and I just wanted to sort of preface this a little bit with some information about this gentleman, Andrew Fetter is. An author. He's been a contractor and owner of a construction company. He's been a grape farmer. He's driven a cab and a limo. He's done all kinds of neat stuff. And actually, was actually a telemarketer selling long distance, folks. but he's also an author, and he's written a book entitled "When the Angels Have Risen." Andrew Fetter, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Bruce.
Well, thank you. Thanks for coming on the radio program this evening. I want, most folks may not have heard about this book. I read it recently, just like last week, and I really enjoyed it. I had a great time with this book. Tell me a little bit about the story behind When the Angels Have Risen.
Well, basically, there are several stories within the story itself, as it entails.
Sure.
It deals with aspects both of with religion, politics, and sci-fi, but it brings it to a more of a contemporary basis. And when I originally wrote that, it was back in 2000 after Bush became our assigned president, and it sort of, brought out the passion in me. I had the idea of the story, and therefore connecting aliens with biblical events in the past. But to bring it contemporary-wise, that's what really brought it out.
Okay. Well, if you could give us just sort of a quick synopsis of some of the storyline, and we'll go a little bit deeper down into the rabbit hole as we go. But if you could sort of just give us a little bit of a quick synopsis of the plot and what people can expect if they get the book.
Well, in a nutshell, we have where it's basically some strange truths basically free the American people in a nutshell. It starts off in a basis in Las Vegas where Jerry Fletcher, the main character, heads to Vegas after trying to restart his whole life after a series of events coming from Los Angeles, and he has some ET sort of approaches that we find out later, encounters that he had on his way there. A year goes by after he becomes, from his past life, he was being, a self-employed, and now, after losing everything, starting all over and starting to work the 9-to-5, working for somebody, and starting his life in Las Vegas. After a year goes by, he takes off with some of his friends, heads up to a trip, and he is picked up by aliens. When he's on the ship at a first encounter.
And this is where it gets fun.
Huh?
And this is where the book gets fun. Trust me. When I was reading the book, I was like, "Oh, this is good. I love it." Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he gets entailed with just imagine if you got wake up and you almost feel like a dream. This can't be. and he finds himself on a spaceship. He meets several distinguished characters, one in specific of this alien who approaches him on the ship and shows him basically how there is a conflict going on and between two sides. That's why a lot of certain events that have been happening, whether it's crop circles and various going on, been going on for thousands of years. He also shows them in biblical events how actually all the information that was given to from Moses to Jesus to Buddha, that they're all alien influenced. And so being skeptical, this Jerry Fletcher's all, come on, let me see, what are you talking about? So he shows, like, as if you're watching a tape. The guy pops up a screen. He's watching a monitor. And then he actually sees the actual event that happened with Moses and the Hebrews taking off from, finally getting their exodus from being slavery. And the pillar of fire coming down, and he sees a ship overhead. He sees the Red Sea being parted, and he sees that being involved with another couple of ships. And he's explained, shown that all these events consistently keep on happening, and there's information consistently coming down on the earth plane. But like I said, he was trying to explain there's two sides, both on a dark and a light side, two forces fighting each other, sort of like the Republicans and the Democrats, if you want to call it that.
the irony is not lost, my friend.
No. But basically, he sees what's really going on, and in my view, he was very skeptical, not believing. Jerry Fletcher was not wanting to get involved with anything. He's just, hey, I just worried about my own thing, like a lot of people do. They just worry about their own little circle, their little bubble around them, and don't think, they think politics is something abstract, religion is something I don't want to deal with. You know, it's there. I just worried about my 9-to-5, make my money, pay the bills next day, and so on and so on. Well, this guy finds out there's more beyond that, and how it's very important that things or events are going to manifest and push back down upon people and basically bringing their self-esteem, therefore challenging the establishment, if you want to call it that, or those who are in control of various organizations, whether it be religious or governmental. So he sent back, from to the earth plane, and he, all of a sudden the government gets, tries to, hold them, and there's a reporter who helps him escape from this hospital and gets him into the public so he could give out, the detailed message of what was really going on. The government, meantime, is trying to shut him up. And he gives his famous speech. Happens actually in Las Vegas. It's carried out through via internet. And meantime,
it may be the first famous speech ever to be given in Las Vegas. But
yeah, probably. And he tells what's going on. And a riot breaks out. Meanwhile, on the same other plane, we see these events happening with these two aliens attacking each other on a different spatial realm that we don't even notice or understand. And at the same time, the riots break out, not just within Las Vegas, but worldwide. People start, hitting over to the Vatican, heading to their governments. And they're, almost like a massive, I won't say riots, but more like massive demonstrations, close to what happened during the late 60s, early 70s, and that scale, but really, on a larger mass. Eventually, as time progresses, the U.S., the revolution from riots turns into a revolt where it becomes a division into a civil war. And basically the North states, well, I wouldn't say North states, the so-called blue states against the red states, where President Halliburton, I'm not going to say who that represents, but is like basically the evildoer in this case, and he's trying to go after and shut out the those who are trying to liberate or re-liberate the United States. And he classified them as terrorists, evildoers, and that's part of his war of terror. And then goes beyond that, and then there's obviously the Civil War, and things happened very quickly. But mind you, this, I wrote it up so it logically can happen. It'd be almost like the so-called, like the Six-Day War that happened back in 67. Well, this is the Six-Day War in the United States.
And actually, what seemed, what I was going to say was, like, actually seemed almost worldwide, like a certain, yeah. Somebody in our chat room already has gone and Googled the book and says, ah, President Halliburton. So, yeah, there's a lot of, there are some definite similarities to our current political situation. But, you know, what really sort of enthralled me about the book was the fact that, or was just the description of a civil war, a modern civil war within the United States. What do you, you know, in your writing and in your thinking about writing this book, what sort of crossed your mind about, what motivated you to sort of think about writing or doing a civil war?
Well, the reason why is because we're running in such a cultural war that it's getting to the point that it could evolve into a thrash of civil disobedience to a point where people are going to take a stand. It could get to that point if, eventually certain things do head into a direction, whether they like it or not, people eventually react. I mean, you push, every revolution that's happened is when there's, you push people to a degree. The main point I was trying to accentuate in this book was a broadcast of self-esteem. So if people had a self-esteem, they would react and say, hey, you know what? We're not going to put up with this BS no more, and we're going to stand up. Now, the Civil War, it's sort of weird because I wrote that back, like I said, originally in 2000. A lot of events, very similar, have been happening since then, in particular with the Iraq War. I made a mention of 9/11, but I didn't call it 9/11. I called it the Twin Towers because I had a feeling that was going to be attacked again way back then because who became in power, and I felt him being very incompetent as far as, military-wise, it would happen again. And, of course, then he would use the excuse and utilize fear as a tactic to take over more power within the United States and place his own agenda on what him and his constituents, which is basically corporate power and the very religious right-wingers as far as carrying out their agenda. As far as the Civil War, I think that logically it could happen in large extent. Like I said, there is a vast separation of culture. If you look on the West, if you go on California, the West Coast, they have a different mindset. People call it progressive, liberal, whatever you want to call it. And I live in Las Vegas, which I actually meet people who are more Midwestern, and they have I'm like, whoa, what? Where'd you come up with that? I mean, it's amazing. I mean, I'll give you an example. I asked people in the United States here around if they believe in creationism or evolution, and you'd be surprised how many people still think the world's flat, and they believe that we all came from Adam and Eve. So,
ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking with Andrew Fetter, who has written a book entitled When the Angels Have Risen, and you can go to authorhouse.com, and Google When the Angels Have Risen. Do you have a website, Andrew?
Yeah, actually, they can just go www.andrewfetter.com and it'll take you right there.
Well, how do you spell that? How do you spell that last name?
Andrew Fetter, Andrew FEDER.com, and it'll take you right to my book. Gives a quick synopsis, even gives you a little synopsis for myself.
Okay.
And if they want, they can always go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and they can check it out there too.
So you are already listed in those other online booksellers. That's just fantastic.
Oh, definitely. In fact, I'm having my first book signing event in Las Vegas, May 20th, at the B. Dalton Bookstore in the Maryland Parkway, which is on Boulevard, what they call the Boulevard Mall. For any of those who are in Las Vegas. Yes, it's actually picked up. Ironically, I was surprised that actually my book took a big jump overseas, actually in the UK. That's where it really started off really quickly, off of the blogs.
That's kind of interesting. So people knew about it through the blogosphere, and then it started rushing out. And that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's how. Actually, I put it out just to see how it would bite, and that's where it really started taking off. I had on one particular blog that actually attacked it they took the description of the book and tried attacking my book from the right wing. And without even any real substance, basically just off the synopsis of my book. I mean, they were joking about, I called it President Halliburton, who's the vice president, Enron? Well, that's Cheney, of course.
Well, that probably gave you more publicity than anything you could have hoped to do for yourself, right?
Definitely.
Because they were attacking it.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wonder about the logic when people start attacking other things, because all it does is draw attention to that person. So they actually do you a favor.
Yeah.
Andrew, are you working on any new literature?
Actually, I do. I have the sequel to this book, which is called The Heretic, and that will come out in 2008.
Okay.
And I'm waiting to send that out after we start running in 2008 elections, you know, during that period. And that is actually the sequel to this book. There's like a year that I don't talk about, and it deals with this character Jerry Fletcher, who finds himself having a series of very strange dreams, and he goes to a psychic, regresses him, and then he finds himself back in time during the times of Alexander the Great.
Oh, wow. That sounds like fun.
Yeah.
But, well, I read the book. It's a really great book, and ladies and gentlemen, if you are interested in a really great piece of fiction that is, it's fiction, but, you know, who knows how true to life some of this stuff can be. What really sort of got me about the book, Andrew, was just how, you know, you wrote this prior to, you know, for instance, prior to 9/11. And, you know, there's too many similarities here, man. It's almost like you had this dream and you saw a lot of this stuff coming to pass and then just sort of like jotted down the vision.
Well, that's how I write. Basically, whenever I write something, I'm dyslexic. So when I write stuff, I just materially throw it down on a piece of paper. If you have thoughts, you got to put them down. Otherwise, they ain't do you any good. But I'm very visual. I don't see things in words. I see things like I'm watching a movie. So when I wrote this book, it was like I'm watching a movie. I'm in it. And then it just comes out. And I'm just putting out all the dialogue and things, what's going on, and all their interactions. And as I'm doing it, some people, if they're seeing me while I'm doing it, they'll go, "Whoa, this guy's like schizophrenic or something," because I will try to emulate those characters who are in the book. But as far as all the events, yeah, I had a really a visual of a lot of the events that now I see them coming out. The one event that had just happened, which I wrote about, basically was the Seattle riots over when they had the World Trade thing. And what really baffled me, the reason why I put that in there was because it rather bothered me that it didn't get the why. It was basically stifled within the media, which surprised me, is the amount of the, especially in Vegas, but it really got, as far as what happened there. I mean, people do not realize how vicious and how heavy of a riot. Basically, the cops were beating up kids. You know, it was almost like watching, you know, 68 and you're out there on Kent State without the gun shootings, you know, but it was not far from it. You know, it could have been like a Chicago riot. But for some reason, our media is purposely trying to close off events from the general public acknowledging what's going on. It's almost similar to what, for example, with Bush, as far as the Downing Street memos and the, oh my God, God forbid, if we find out what's really going on behind Bush's agenda and how he really was planning this war along. Like, everybody's all of a sudden surprised. Well, I wasn't surprised. A lot of people weren't surprised, but the general public were, you know. They were just like led like sheep, and a lot of it has to do, and you know, blame it on the media, and it's not the liberal media. It's basically, and they call it that. And I don't know why, but it's very corporate media.
Yeah, the mainstream media itself, the corporate media for sure, it's turned into something that is very nefarious, I think. But what kinds of activism are you involved in, Andrew?
I'm very much involved with the Vext, and I was involved with the Kerry campaign out here in Vegas. Also with which really got me going was the involved with Yucca Mountain situation. I don't know if people are aware of that. That's where they wanted to use Yucca Mountain, which is actually not extinct but dormant a volcano about 90 miles just north of Vegas, and that's where they want to deposit the nation's radioactive material. And what really bothered me was on twofold. One was, hey, I just moved here. I want this in my backyard. And second, I thought it was sort of really stupid, especially after being attacked in New York and in Washington, and they're talking about transporting all this material across the United States on railways, on trucks, and, why don't we just hand some more bullets to terrorists or people who want to get hold of radioactive material and create dirty bombs? I mean, it's sort of stupid, but it doesn't surprise me with this government that we do have. So that I got very much involved with that.
Have you heard much about this? I'm talking with Andrew Fetter, who has written a book entitled When the Angels Have Risen, and you can check that out by going to Barnes & Noble or Amazon or whoever, just typing When the Angels Have Risen to check that out. Have you, Andrew, heard anything about the upcoming bomb test that they're going to be doing out there in the desert close to Vegas?
Yeah, it's coming out. They're talking about in the beginning of June. I think it's June 2nd or 3rd, and that's sort of like I think it's more like a show to the Iranians. I think it's more of a test. That's what they're trying to do. Let's see what we can do without maybe using a nuke bomb and throw one over there.
Is there any organized resistance in Las Vegas
that's the irony, when I found out what's really surprising me in Las Vegas, this by living here I really got a center of what there's different attitudes in the United States as far as, you know, coming from Los Angeles, for example, if they were planning to stick a depository 90 miles away, hell, there'd be riots. Come on, you know. These people live in Las Vegas, which is generally, I don't like to sound, you know, degrading or anything. It's just sort of like a mentality dropped down on them. It's very Midwestern where they think that, you know, if it doesn't concern me, oh, well, what can I do? They have that very apathetic attitude, except for when it comes to money and union strikes. If there's a union strike, boy, oh, boy, man, they're out there. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because when I used to go out to protest over Yucca Mountain, which is, by the way, located near on a site which technically belongs to the Shoshone Indians, which is a whole other story, the people who would come out to protest were from California, Oregon, Washington, you know, hardly anybody from Las Vegas. And yet, you know, they'll say, hey, yeah, you know, what can we do? We're against it, but, you know, it's already in there. And the only ones who are actually quite vocal and speaking up against it, and I have to hand it to them, is one is particular is Oscar Goodman, the mayor here in Las Vegas. He's been very vocal. I mean, as far as flying to Washington, D.C., and dealing with, you know, political figures and both national and governmental and state trying to, you know, stop those events. As far as now the thing that's coming in June, there hasn't been any really protests as big as the anti-Yucca Mountain situation. It's almost like we're shoving it down your throat, we're going to do it, don't worry, it's not radioactive, you trust us. So,
you know, that just brings to mind, I hate to invoke the name of Ronald Reagan, but he said eight most hated words, and I shouldn't even say this, but I'm going to anyway. He said the eight most hated words in the English language were, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you. I think it's. I'm in the Republican Party, and I'm here, you know. And trust me. Well, thanks, Andrew, so much for being on the radio program this evening. And please do, like, you know, go ahead and give us the website address where people can go and check out your book and any, you know, any other information or contact information you'd like to get out there. Go ahead and do that.
All right. You can check out my book directly on my website at www.andrewfeder.com. That's FEDER.com. Or you can always check it out by hitting either my name, Andrew Fetter, or When the Angels Have Risen at Barnes & Noble or Amazon.com. And I'm off. I'm sorry?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
And if anybody would like to email me after reading it and just give me their thoughts, I'd be happy to receive them. And that my email address is flyingpigs@artlover.com.
Flying pig or flying pigs?
Flying pigs.
All right. That's kind of a groovy email address. All right. Well, Andrew Fetter, thank you so much for being on the radio program tonight. We got to go off to a break here, but keep us posted. Keep dropping me a line to let me know how things are going. And if you ever get out to my neck of the woods there in North Carolina, I'd love to sit down and have a cup of coffee with you.
I appreciate it, Bruce, and thank you for having me on the program. And keep it up. I love listening to you, especially at night doing design work, which is my night job.
There you go.
Take care.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Okay. And ladies and gentlemen, that was Andrew Fetter, who has written a book entitled When the Angels Have Risen. You can get that by going to Barnes & Noble or going to his website, Andrew Fetter, F-E-D-E-R, andrewfetter.com. Fantastic sci-fi, political, religious book. It's kind of an interesting book. I had a good time with it. You are listening to All Things Reconsidered with Bruce Birch. If you want to get in on the radio program, you can do so by dialing 1-877-443-2366. We'll be right back.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
And I'm Jesse Russell.
Ford said Thursday it's closing plants in St. Paul, Minnesota and Norfolk, Virginia. The United Auto Workers Union says the closings are a continuation of the devastating restructuring plan Ford announced in January. The UAW says workers are paying the price for Ford's loss of market share and for the nation's failure to enact rational job-creating policies for U.S. industry. The UAW is paying a steep price as well. According to filings with the U.S. Labor Department, the UAW lost 10.5% of its members in 2005. That's down now to a total of 557,000 active UAW members in the U.S.
Outsourcing may not have the benefits previously touted by advocates. A new study by outsourcing advisory firm TPI says that after governance costs, professional fees, and severance pay are factored in, savings are on average around 15%. The new information flies in the face of previous estimates that outsourcing could save companies upwards of 60% in costs.
The United Steelworkers Union is suing Alcoa in a federal class action suit to defend retirees from cuts in their health care benefits. USW spokesman Gerald Dickey says despite big profits, Alcoa started charging some of its retirees premiums of as much as $400 a month, even though the union contract provides health care with no premium payments by workers.
The company has unilaterally decided to start charging them a premium for their health care. These are people on fixed incomes. And in order for them to keep the same benefits, they will be required to pay in excess of $400 a month for a family plan to keep the same benefits.
Dickey says this move by Alcoa is part of a national assault on pensions.
Highly profitable company. No need whatsoever to go after these retirees. Profitable companies and highly profitable companies now want to jump on this bandwagon and try to gut our pension system.
Since Alcoa could try expanding these arbitrary unilateral benefits cuts in the future, Dickey says the USW will also attempt to address the issue at the bargaining table.
Planet Check. Planet Check.
Michael Franti from Spearhead talks about the new benefit CD for the nonprofit environmental law firm, Earth Justice.
I'm always involved in Earth Justice as an idea, no matter where I go.
Franti, along with artists Nora Jones, Los Lobos, Willie Nelson, and Bonnie Raitt, donated their music in support of life's absolute necessities, clean air and water.
Music today is not speaking to really what's happening on the streets. It's really important that artists come together, work on projects together, and put out unified voices about what's happening today in our planet.
In the United States alone, more than 70,000 people die per year from air pollution.
Keep on talking now, yes I will.
Music makes a difference. Give it a spin at wherewelive.org. That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
Doctors in Idaho are being asked, why get sued when a simple I'm sorry will do? The Idaho legislature has enacted a new plan that they hope will cut back on malpractice lawsuits, encouraging doctors to apologize when treatments don't go as planned. Insurance companies have a long-standing practice of encouraging doctors not to apologize in such cases out of fear that it may increase the chance of a lawsuit. However, Robin Brody of the Idaho Trial Lawyers Association says studies show that when doctors apologize and explain unintended outcomes, patients are actually less likely to sue.
When we let our doctors talk to patients openly, ultimately that benefits everyone.
The new Idaho apology law protects doctors from having their apologies used against them in court.
Here's the Wynn Economic Report. Are incomes for the average American rising? The average per capita after-tax income rose 8.6% between 2001 and 2006, but huge increases in earnings by the wealthiest portion of society skewed the figures. The median family income fell 3.6% from 2001 to 2004. This means that real income for most people in society either stagnated or fell during this period.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic. Mm.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss a tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
Back on all things reconsidered with Bruce Bircher.
Yes, that's the radio program.
I get off on the Frank Zappa bumpers that I put through on the radio program, and that was one called an instrumental version of "Let's Make the Water Turn Black." Oh boy. Okay, so we just had a radio conversation with Andrew Fetter. You can, you know, if you didn't catch that website address, it's andrewfeder.com. andrewfeder.com. Spin his hit counters. Go check him out. And thank you, Andrew, for being on the program. I understand. Our buddy Rob, who was on in the first half hour, is now on in the third half hour. Rob, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm here.
He's there. Yes. All right, man. What's I think we left off. We were talking about what were we talking about?
We were talking about 9/11, but I think I want to change track.
Okay, fantastic.
Well, one of the things I want to explain to people, and one of the things I'd love to know is how you make a living doing what you do.
I have eight jobs.
Oh well,
not eight.
I'm not.
I have a couple.
Well, one of the things I'd like to, you know, for people to think about is that, you know, in my family, my father had a job.
Okay.
He bought a house for $9,000 in 1962.
Wow.
Had two new vehicles. He worked as a clerk in the Firestone store. Hello? Do we live like that today? Not even close.
No.
You know, you have to have, you know, a $80,000 a year job just to get by. Am I crazy?
And, no, you're not crazy. I mean, I would say that that's that $80,000 now probably wouldn't. I mean, I'm just going to be perfectly honest with you. I'm not going to give away my entire, you know, what I make,
what you're worth.
No. Yeah. Well, yeah. That's just not, you know. But I make. I mean, I raise a family, three kids, who are two of them are teenagers, and my wife and I both work. And I think, like, you know, I'll give you a salary range. How about that? Somewhere in the neighborhood of about between 50 and 70.
Nothing.
A year. And that's two jobs now.
Yeah.
That's not one job. That's two jobs.
Right.
And you know, and it's still a struggle a lot of days to make sure that everything gets paid and paid on time and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, and our family is not dissimilar to any other family that's out there trying to make ends meet.
I'd love to talk to Republicans and ask them how they're doing financially. You know, most Republicans are going to say, you know, tax cuts are great. Yeah, but the tax cuts aren't for you. They're for the CEOs.
Yeah. And it's an established fact that the CEOs themselves are going to make, you know, that if they can't make the kind of living that they're accustomed to, then they will start cutting labor costs.
In order to
get their own salaries.
How about the retirement package for the CEO of Exxon?
Well, you know, look what he did. Right after Hurricane Katrina, they had the single largest quarter profit in the history of corporate America. I mean, the entire history of corporate America.
Yeah.
The percentage of profit was something ungodly. I mean, it was just like into the trillions of dollars.
Yeah, it's obscene. I mean,
you know, and they did it off the backs of poor African Americans in New Orleans.
And
they used that as an excuse.
California.
Absolutely. They use that as an excuse to jack up the gas prices, saying, "Oh, the refineries are down. The refineries are down." You know, and the reality is, you know, that there was plenty of product out there. They just they use the fear as a way to artificially inflate the gas prices.
Plus, the energy package that the Bush administration put out had $25 billion for the oil companies to build refineries. Not only did they make huge profits, that the government gave them $25 billion on top of those huge profits to build more refineries.
And, yeah, it's sickening, isn't it, Rob?
I bang my head on the table literally on a regular basis.
Well, don't bang your head, man. Go bang a pot and pan and make some noise. You know,
yeah, you're right.
I mean, I guess... You know, I mean, and herein lies sort of what happened. If you want to talk about the synthesis of this radio program, which we can,
that's what
created this program. That's what's created this network. Is that there are enough of us who got fed up enough with the direction that this country is going, and with the outright thievery of corporate America.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, in West Virginia, these folks who go down to those mines, man, who go and risk their lives every day so that you and I can have electricity.
Damn.
You know, that makes me turn off my lights when I leave the room. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean, I get up and leave the room, I turn off the light. I'm thinking of that miner down in the ground somewhere who might get, you know, blown up or incinerated or, you know, and then his family gets a measly little, you know, oh, well, you know, we're sorry. You know, and they make my producer is telling me that they make about $35,000 a year doing that.
Bruce, tell me.
You know,
I want to do stuff. I'm not sure what to do. Tell me what.
Well, where are your talents? What do you feel like that you're good at?
Well, I think I could do a radio show, but well, you know, I'm in the middle of red country. I'm upstate New York, which is about as red as Tennessee,
North Carolina.
Yeah.
Well, West Virginia?
Exactly.
The first thing I would say if you have a voice and you have ideas and you want to share that voice and share that idea, then get cracking on it. I mean, the bottom line is that we have in this network created a new paradigm in media, and that new paradigm in media is that if the media is not going to tell the story, then you need to be the media. Okay? You need to be the one who's going to stick your neck out. And to hell with those people who are red and Republican or whatever. You know what? Be a thorn in their side. Make them see reality. You know, if they're not interested in looking at it, you know, twist it a different way. Make them look at it a different way.
Bruce, I appreciate that point of view. But, you know, even the most independent small-town radio station has been gobbled up by corporate media. WSCP, Pulaski, this less than 3,000... radio station has been gobbled up by Galaxy. I don't know who it is. Galaxy gobbled up this radio station. They don't want to listen to me.
Well, and therein is, you know, where affiliating yourself with sort of a people's network such as ours or another one might, you know, be the way to go. I mean, as far as like telling you the ins and outs of what to do with that once you get started, but I think the biggest thing is looking at what you want to do, what you want to say and how you want to say it. There's plenty of room out here for plenty of voices, my man. And, you know, I would say if you feel like that's where your talent is to pursue it. And with Andrew Fetter, his talent is writing. You know, he's pursuing it. And with me, you know, doing this thing and some other things I'm involved in, and I love to do activism. I work with the homeless population. That's another area. I mean, you know, changing the world doesn't necessarily have to happen through politics either. A lot of that can happen through just by, you know, going out and helping someone across the street. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
It's changing the paradigm of being selfish, and America has turned into this huge selfish behemoth of you know, I don't want to say outright hatred, but it's, you know, there's an ill will. People don't want to talk to each other. If somebody gets shot, they don't want to pay attention. They don't want to get involved. Well, you know what? It's time that we need to get involved. Let's change that paradigm. And the way to do it is one person at a time. I think it is.
Well, I appreciate that, Bruce. I really do.
If every one of us went out this week and did one thing to help other people this week, you know, everybody listening to this program, imagine what kind of change would occur across the country. I think it would be fantastic.
It would.
You know, so I mean, that's just a matter of us actually doing that and creating that kind of sacrifice.
It's been in my mind for a long time is if, you know, if we had been distributing farming machinery instead of weaponry throughout the world, what would the world look like right now? If we'd been
a big cornfield.
Yeah. If we'd been manufacturing tractors and well drillers instead of missiles and jets, how would the world look today over the last 50 years?
Yeah. Well, and that's just it, is that the priorities are backwards, you know, but the folks who are in power, they unfortunately make a lot of money off of death, destruction, and killing. We need to change that.
I thought it was humorous, and I only saw this for a second. It was Bill Kristol saying, you know, he was going to be doing a CNN, you know, answering questions. Was Bill Kristol saying, there's no industrial military industrial industrial military complex. That's ridiculous. I had to scream at the TV.
You know, and the other thing too is that I look at that stuff and I don't really scream anymore, man. I just sort of like I chuckle. I think, you know,
I know.
The sad fact is that there are people out there that will buy that crap hook, line, and sinker every time he spouts it just because he's Bill Kristol.
Yeah.
And those people are beyond reaching. And you know what? And I don't want to say that they're beyond reaching. My father, who was a lifelong Republican, changed his party affiliation before the 2004 election because he said those people are not what he envisions to be true Americans.
No, they're not.
You know? So, I mean, I do think that there's hope out there. You know, and I do think, like, for instance, Bush was here in California this week while I was here. I wonder if he was following me around. But he was here in California this week, and more people, I mean, like, over 3,000 people throughout the time that he was here, over 3,000 people turned out against him in the various places that he went.
Oh.
1,000 people blocked him from going into Stanford University. They had to change their plans at the last minute and go somewhere else because people had blocked the road. Protesters had blocked the road to keep him from going onto the university property.
That's awesome.
You know, in Sacramento, well, and there was a situation in Sacramento. It looks like last night I was talking with someone on the air about the possibility that there could be a situation up there that apparently a protester left a bag or something on the ground. The police went to the extreme thinking it was a bomb.
Sure.
And arrested him and charged him and, you know, and there's all, you know. But in those kinds of situations, as I have been involved in protest marches, I've done a bunch myself. There's always seems to be some element involved in the march that's trying to get you to do something violent or try to get you to do something non-peaceful. And I can't help but harken back to the days of COINTELPRO when, you know, the authorities would infiltrate these peace marches and try to make people do bad things to discredit them.
Well, there's got to be a justification for the free speech zones.
Well, as bad as I hate to say this, you know, I don't think it's a stretch. Based on how badly the approval is of this current administration, and based on how badly their fool's errand in Iraq is going, it's not a huge stretch to hear them create something to criminalize dissent. You know, it wouldn't surprise me any if I were to wake up tomorrow and find that someone has created a law called the Allegiance Law or some crap like that, which would be basically an Alien and Seditions Act all over again. Because they really want to stifle this voice of dissent. They don't want people seeing that there's people out there actually against this president. You know?
Well, look at this, the Sedition Act of, I don't know, it's 1915 or 16. It was during World War One. You were not allowed to talk against American government. Really? Go to jail.
Well, now, yeah, well, and Teddy Roosevelt turned around and said, you know, dissent is one of the highest forms of patriotism.
Absolutely.
In essence, he said that. There was a different quote, and I believe Thomas Jefferson actually said that quote, that dissent was the highest form of patriotism. But, I mean, they're all down through history, you know, there have been all of the progressive presidents have all embraced dissent and said this is essential to democracy. Democracy is not a spectator sport. It is something that is messy, and you know what? Creating it can be damn bloody at times. You know?
I think that is the attack of liberalism is that, you know, we want to blame America first. Well, what we really want to do is make America the best. You know,
I think where their flawed argument with it in that is that they're actually equating themselves as being America.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, but I don't see fascism as being an American principle.
Absolutely. We want America to live up to the promise of America. And if I had a radio station, that would be my hook, is that what's America mean to you? America means something very specific to me. What's America mean to you?
Yeah. Well, you know, fascism, the new F word. you know, we have our work cut out for us, and there's no doubt in that area. But I also think that the time is ripe. I mean, you know, and as a friend of mine said recently, you know, the only poll that counts is the one that's in November. But, you know, in reality, we all have, like we talked about a few minutes ago, we all have our talents and our have our strengths, and we need to go out and utilize those strengths and utilize those talents to try to create change. But we also need to work at the grassroots level to try to create a progressive party, whether it's the Democratic Party Let's hope it is, because that's the most established party of the left that's out there.
Unfortunately.
Now, the leaders in D.C. may not necessarily be as progressive as we want them to be.
No.
Matter of fact, I would say they're absolutely not as progressive as we would want them to be.
What's funny, though?
But the only way that we're going to get them to pay attention is if we wield the power in the local areas, because they also need our money.
Yeah.
And if they're not getting our money, then they're going to have to be held to account.
Right.
Or they won't get reelected. And you know, reelection's a very big deal for a politician. I found that
sure
out.
Sure is.
So, oh my goodness, Rob! Thanks so much for calling up tonight and being a part of the radio program.
Bruce, I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. And we'll talk to you real soon.
All right, bye.
Okay. That was our good friend Rob from upstate New York. He came in on the radio program in the first half hour of the program. We talked a little bit about the 9/11 situation, and sort of skipped right through a break, which is, well, we're going to go a few more minutes and then we'll take our hard break at the bottom of the hour for those of you who need to use the bathroom. I did want to cover this one story before we go off to our break, and that is that we have very interesting stuff going on surrounding Earth Day. On a little noticed page inside of the House Resources Committee website, the Republican majority staff have prepared a folio celebrating Earth Day. The focus of the site is aimed at dispelling the sky is falling sensationalism of environmental activists that lead people to falsely believe that our environment is getting worse when it's actually getting better. We've got to come up with some opposite world music, maybe carnival music or something like that. The site is cleanly designed and professional, conveying the soft aesthetic that has become a hallmark of the environmental movement. It begins in a nonpartisan fashion. Earth Day is an opportunity for all Americans to educate themselves on the state of our environment and to pitch in their local communities to make them better. But from there, it becomes clearly partisan, lauding America's environmental achievements and attacking those who would have Americans believe anything is wrong with the environment in the United States. There is no mention of global warming or climate change anywhere on the site. A section titled Big Business, which some might mistakenly imagine detailing the role of big business in environmental change or even praising big business's role in helping the environment, is instead dedicated to detailing the budgets of the largest environmental organizations and accusing them of spending money on themselves rather than on the environment. It claims, and I quote, "Unfortunately, the positive trend lines don't fill the pockets of America's environmental activist industry. Scare tactics and sensational rhetoric have enabled the top 30 organizations to generate billions in annual revenue, according to public documents. But how much of this money is spent on real hands-on muddy boots conservation work for the environment? Almost none. Instead, it is spent on lobbyists and lawyers, partisan politics, direct mail, and more sensational fundraising campaigns. However, aside from the Nature Conservancy, whose annual revenue is listed as $760 million, no single environmental group comes close to the retirement package recently given ExxonMobil Chairman Lee Raymond. Raymond was awarded a $400 million golden parachute for his 12 years of service to the most profitable company in the world. His retirement bonus is equivalent to a third of the annual budget of all environmental groups listed by House Republicans. ExxonMobil had a $36 billion profit last year. And according to this website, here are the top five environmental myths. These are the myths. These are the things they think are myths. In other words, not true. The top five myths are, drum roll please. Number one, or I should say, number five. Wait a minute. There's six of these. Okay. The top five myths are, and there's six of them. That tells you everything you need to know about the House Resources Committee. They can't count. Okay, the top five myths are, number one, economic growth harms the environment. Number two, Emissions are devastating America's air quality. That's a myth, they say, is a myth. Number three, the evils of oil can be easily be replaced with renewable energy. They say that's a myth. Number four, humans will die of thirst. In the future, we will have no more fresh water. Number five, America is losing its last pristine forest lands. That's myth number five. And number six of the top five myths. Oh, my God, this is too much. 40,000 species go extinct every year, and that's not funny. That in and of itself is just absolutely not funny. Good Lord. What are we going to do about these people? I'm going to pull a Mike Malloy. Have I told you how much I hate these people? And I really don't hate them. I just think they're complete buffoons and have no business governing this country. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to All Things Reconsidered. My name is Bruce Birch. This is on the Head On Radio Network, Radio for a Real America. If you want to get in on the radio program, you can do so by dialing 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877-443-2366. It's about 28 minutes after the hour and past the hour there. And you know what? We'll be right back.
Magazine with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. Bush the Decider's defense of Donald Rumsfeld should give you a big clue. Not only is he keeping with Rumsfeld, he's keeping with war. A bombing of Iran is more likely now than before, I believe, and an escalation, yes, escalation of the Iraq War may be on the boards as well. In fact, the two may go together. I was talking with Professor Michael Clare of Hampshire College the other day, and he told me the Bush administration doesn't care if bombing Iran leads to more trouble in Iraq. Why? Because Bush wants to send more troops to Iraq and needs an excuse to do so. Iran may provide one. And even without the incendiary provocation of bombing Iran, Bush may escalate the war in Iraq anyhow. The Sunday Times of London reports that the American military is planning a second liberation of Baghdad. Pacifying the lawless capital is regarded as essential, it adds. To pacify the capital, and it's appalling even to use such a euphemism, the Bush administration would be using air power, special operations, embedded officers, and backup troops, said the Times of London. Translation, Bush is going to bomb Baghdad again. The casualties of such an offensive could be great. It'd kill a lot of Iraqis and a lot of U.S. soldiers, too. And there's no way that such an offensive would wipe out the insurgency. More likely, it would make the insurgency dig in even more deeply in other strongholds in the Sunni triangle. Bush would do it, though, because the only tactic Bush knows is offensive. And that's the most offensive thing of all. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
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 Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be?
Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
All right, you're back on All Things with Bruce Birch, and yes, indeed, that was Life is a Highway, Tom Cochran. And life is a highway. I think it is. And we're all riding, man. We're all riding. And some of us are hitchhiking, and some of us are on the roads, and some of us are making $36 billion a year selling gas to the rest of us. Ugh. $36 billion, ladies and gentlemen. I just read that. That's like a friend of mine looked it up and is like, that's over $1 million a minute. That's just incredible. That's an incredible, incredible amount of money. Gosh almighty. All right, we're following the rabbit hole wherever it takes us tonight. And tonight it's taken us to a number of different places. It's taken us to 9/11 and to World Trade Center 7, to the Pentagon. It's taken us to Andrew Fetter and his book, Where the Angels, When the Angels Have Risen. Andrew Fetter, FEDER.com. It's also taken us back to our friend Rob Mo in Rob in northern in northern New York there, upstate New York they call it, not northern New York, it's upstate New York. And you know, we're talking about some of the things that we can do as individuals to try to bring about some change in this country. The conservative movement. The conservative movement is imploding, ladies and gentlemen. It's my firm belief that they're imploding. Now, what are we going to replace it with? Are we going to replace it with liberal elitism and people, you know, at the head of the Democratic Party who think that they might know better than the rest of us how to run this country? I mean, I really have a tough time with that idea. Now, I am a Democrat. I'm a registered Democrat. I'll tell you that up front. I'm not a happy man with John Kerry. I'm not a happy man with, Harry Reid's doing an okay job, but we're not hearing enough of an opposition. Now, there's another friend of mine. I have a lot of friends. I don't ever mention them by name, but I have a lot of friends. There's another friend of mine who says that that America needs a second party. But I do think, honestly, I do think that the answer to that is for us to do a grassroots thing and try to bring about some change locally and also nationally. And I also think, I believe, that the House will go to the Democrats this fall. Now, what do we do with it? You know? But let's not count our chickens before they hatch, you know? Let's go ahead and get it first. But what are we going to do with it when it happens? There is a certain Democrat that I do want to mention because he is from the great state of North Carolina, where I'm from. I'm not there right now. I'm in California, but I'm not really even from North Carolina, but okay. All right. I live in North Carolina. I'm in California visiting, but I will go back to North Carolina at the end of the week. And that is John Edwards, the former Democratic vice presidential candidate, sent an email yesterday seeking signatories in an effort to expand the powers of Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald to investigate President Bush's role in the strategic leaking of information related to Iraq. Notice the language, strategic leaking. Okay, what that means is selective leaking. Strategic, no. Selective, yes. Let's leak the name of Valerie Plame. Let's leak specific information of the National Intelligence Estimate to the media to try to combat the truth. In a form letter on Edwards' site, he writes, "I urge you to extend Mr. Fitzgerald's charter to include the behavior of the president in this disgraceful affair." I'm going to read part of this letter now. I read a little bit about this last night on Fourth Estate Radio, but if you didn't listen, here it is. Dear friend, over the past few weeks, the investigation into the leak of CIA secrets on Iraq has produced disturbing new information. Court filings in the Scooter Libby case have connected both President Bush and Vice President Cheney.
Cheney.
With an effort. No, that's my language. That's not John's. Vice President Cheney. With an effort to selectively disclose classified and highly flawed intelligence to the media in order to discredit people who were asking legitimate questions about the Iraq invasion. The White House even admitted that President Bush himself authorized the disclosure. Now that he is firmly linked to this deepening scandal, it is time for President Bush to level with the American people about his role in the egregious manipulation of sensitive intelligence. But you and I know he's not going to do it. And we know that the Republican-controlled Congress will not hold him accountable either. Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald may very well be the only person who can shed light on what really happened and ensure accountability. What he needs now is our support to expand the scope of his investigation to specifically include whether the president broke the law. Let's put our online community to work and together demand that Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, here's my language, Torturador Gonzalez, allow Mr. Fitzgerald to get to the bottom of this. No one should be above the law. It is time we demand real accountability. You can go to the One America, here's the website address, oneamericacommittee.com, oneamericacommittee.com. To go and sign this petition, if you so desire, I would like to recommend that you do so, because the bottom line is that what's it going to hurt? It'll take you all of 30 seconds to do it. OneAmericaCommittee.com. OneAmericaCommittee.com. Go check that out while you're listening. Now, wanted to also sort of bring up a disturbing story that came across my desk this evening, and the story is related to Iraq again. You know, what a place, what a disturbing place that is these days. But a lot of the truth, a lot of the facts are not coming out of Iraq. A lot of the facts are not coming out of Iraq. And one of those facts that's not coming out of Iraq very, very much is the fact that criminal gangs are now running amok in Iraq. And there are hundreds of young girls that have gone missing. Let me just read part of this to you, because I think it bears being brought up here on all things. The man on the phone with the 14-year-old Iraqi girl called himself Sayad. He was calling long distance from Dubai and telling her wonderful things about the place. He was also about to buy her. Safa, the teenager, was well aware of the impending transaction. In the weeks after she was kidnapped and imprisoned in a dark house in Baghdad's middle-class Karanda district, Safa heard her captors haggling with Sayad over her price. It was finally settled at $10,000. Staring at a floor strewn with empty whiskey bottles, the orphan listened as Sayad described the life awaiting her. A beautiful home, expensive clothes, parties with pop stars. Why, she'd be joining two other very happy teenage Iraqi girls living with Sayad in his harem. Safa knew that she was running out of time. A fake passport with her photo and assumed name had already been forged for her, but even if she escaped, she had no family who would take her in. She was even likely to end up in prison. What was she to do? Safa is part of a seldom discussed aspect of the epidemic of kidnappings in Iraq, sex trafficking. No one knows how many of the young women have been kidnapped and sold since the fall of Saddam Hussein in 2003. The Organization for Women's Freedom in Iraq, based in Baghdad, estimates from anecdotal evidence that more than 2,000 Iraqi women have gone missing in that period. A Western official in Baghdad who monitors the status of women in Iraq thinks that figure may be inflated, but admits that sex trafficking, virtually non-existent under Saddam, has become a serious issue. The collapse of law and order and the absence of a stable government have allowed criminal gangs, alongside terrorists, to run amok. Meanwhile, some aid workers say bureaucrats in the ministries have either paralyzed with red tape or frozen the assets of charities that might have provided refuge for these girls. As a result, sex trafficking has been allowed to fester unchecked. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, here's one more piece of evidence that these people who are running this freaking government in our nation have no idea how to govern anybody's nation, much less one that they conquered using military force. I'd like to put forward the proposition that they're going to burn in seven versions of hell when this is all over with. If there's a God in heaven and a Satan in hell, you know where they're headed. Because, oh, God. I have a teenage daughter, ladies and gentlemen. And the very idea that a teenage girl could get a 14-year-old girl, my daughter's 14. The very idea that she could get sold for sexual slavery by a criminal gang, oh, man, it just puts me in a place that I don't really want to be. You know, and on this radio program, we try to continue to move with positive things, but, you know, the entire world is not filled with positive things, and the entire world is not about, you know, the oh, my God. A stunning 18-year-old named Amna, nicknamed Amna, her black hair pulled back in a ponytail, says she was taken from an orphanage by an armed gang just after the U.S. invasion and sent to brothels in Samarra, Al-Qaim on the border with Syria, and Mosul in the north before she was taken back to Baghdad, drugged with pills, dressed in a suicide belt, and sent to bomb a cleric's office where she turned herself in to the police. A judge gave her a 7-year jail sentence for her sake to protect her from the gang. Women's rights abound in Iraq. Women's rights abound in Iraq. Did you guys just hear that? She was kidnapped from an orphanage, sold into sexual slavery, and then dressed in a suicide belt and sent to bomb a cleric's office. She turned herself into the police, and the judge gave her a 7-year jail sentence for her own sake. Democracy's on the rise. Freedom's on the march. Bull. Bull. I call bull. Okay? And God, you know, this is just too sad, and I got to share it, though, because the bottom line is that you're not going to hear this in the mainstream media very much. It's terribly sad. You know, and as time goes on over in that country, it's going to get worse, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to get worse before it gets better. What's going to happen someday over there is, you know, we're going to look back on this time period in this nation, and we're going to say, how did we get duped? How do we let those people take us to the cleaners? How do we let those people take us down this road of death and destruction and evilness? How could we let this basically good nation become kidnapped by these thugs and used as a pawn in this international power play? What are we going to say to our children when they look at us and say, were you alive when this happened? Did you do anything to try to stop it? All right. Well, I would suggest very strongly that if you aren't doing anything to stop it, maybe now is the time to start. Okay? Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to All Things Reconsidered. My name is Bruce Birch. If you want to get in on the radio program, you can do so by dialing 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877-443-2366. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back after I get my crap together.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. Well, I should have put more money down on my bet last year that Rumsfeld would outlast McClellan. The only way Rumsfeld's going out is feet first. The best line I heard on McClellan's departure comes from political comic Will Durst, who said McClellan resigned so he can spend more time lying to his family. I mean, what a position to be the hired liar. Wonder what the job interview is like for that post. Can you lie with a straight face? Can you lie with indignation? An Ari Fleischer specialty, by the way. Can you assert with the utmost confidence that even though 50 U.S. soldiers are dying every month in Iraq, that we're making good progress over there? It takes a special kind of person for that job, and maybe Tony Snow of Fox is just the guy, as it's been rumored. With a mixture of pompous and stolid, and a mind unfettered by facts, Snow might be perfect. And so would the symbolism. After fronting for the administration on Fox, which is a redundancy anyway, why not get paid to do it by Bush instead of by Murdoch? But whoever is Bush's mouthpiece, the idea that switching press secretaries will have any effect is a joke. Even a more skillful liar can't make Bush's rotten policies smell any better. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Hey, have you got a minute?
Huh?
I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The man ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha!
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
When it rains, all my friends go away.
God doesn't like me anymore.
The wind could come and take your house. Santa won't know where to find me. Mommy scared the sky.
What's going on in the mind of a child who's lived through a hurricane?
You can drown in your bed if you fall asleep.
A lot. Talk to them. Reassure them. We can help. Call 1-800-789-2647 to make sure they move on healthy and happy. That's 1-800-789-2647. Trained and caring people are ready to assist you 24 hours a day. It's confidential and free. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
All right, you're back on All Things with Bruce Birch, and you know we left that last segment there, Rob. Talking about some very serious issues, and it's not my intention, ladies and gentlemen, to bring to the fore, to shock you. It's not my intention to bring you information that is shocking and is, you know, but we have to talk about what's really happening, you know, and if what is really happening is shocking, and if what is really happening, you know, is as bad as what I just read to you, as what I just talked to you about, then that means it's all the more reason that we have to talk about it. We have to bring it out. This president and this Congress has usurped the very freaking principles that this country was founded on. This president and this Congress has created the kind of reality in the United States that harkens back to the days of slavery, of feudalism, of corporatism run amok. More than one Homeland Security person has been charged with trying to pick up children for sex. And now we learn in Iraq. That these children are getting kidnapped and sold into sexual slavery. My heart goes out to them, ladies and gentlemen. There's no other thing that I can really say about it besides my heart goes out to them. And I will say a silent prayer tonight for those children because they can't defend themselves. I'm a grown person and I can defend myself. Children can't do that. And they depend on us as elders to take care of them. That's our job. And apparently we're not doing it in Iraq as well as we're not doing anything else to take care of anything else over there besides lining the pockets of Halliburton. I really don't want to end the show on a sad note. I really don't. But that's reality for this week, ladies and gentlemen. That's reality for this week. The positive note could be, there's the story of Iraq. The positive note could be that one more week we were able to try to bring some truth to the fore, and we were able to try to bring some facts out. And one more week we've tried to create a different reality, even though we're fighting against some pretty damned big odds. We're still trying to bring some reality, some basis in truth and basis in principles and freedom and democracy. Democracy's not a spectator sport, ladies and gentlemen. Democracy requires effort. And that means that your voice has to be heard. You have to stand up like that guy Harry Taylor in North Carolina a couple weeks ago. You have to stand up and say to those people, speak truth to power and say to them, I'm ashamed of you. You're not an American like I'm an American. You're not espousing principles that I believe in. That's our job as citizens, ladies and gentlemen, is to stand up and say, no more, not in my name, will you create this kind of violence? Will you create this kind of reality for those people? Will you create the kind of atmosphere that fosters sexual slavery? Go out this week and do something, please, for the love of God and for the love of those children. Go out this week and try to make a difference, ladies and gentlemen. And that's all I'm going to say about that, because that's all that needs to be said. This radio program is brought to you by the Head On Radio Network. You can go to headonradionetwork.com and check that out if you're interested in that, in our broadcasting and in our programmatic content. There's a bunch of radio programs that we're doing, and we'd love to have you aboard. And not all of them are as not all of them end as sad or possibly as negative as this one did tonight. We're also being brought to you by I'd like to thank my producer Agnes Kincaid. Thank you, Agnes. You did a fantastic, wonderful, amazing job tonight. You are the heart and soul of the Head On Radio Network. I'd also like to thank Ben Birch for archiving my radio program. I'd also like to, and for streaming it at the White Rose Society. Go to whiterosesociety.org, and you can find all things Reconsidered with Bruce Birch going back to August of last year there. And I'd also like to thank the the folks over at WD-40 for posting my link up there. Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate it. You rock. You do good work over there. And last but not least, I'd like to thank the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights for sponsoring the programmatic content of this radio network. You guys are building the American dream, and we're helping you do it. So thank you so much, guys, for doing that. And ladies and gentlemen, my name is Bruce Birch. I'll see you next week. Thanks for joining me.
Somewhere